Welcome to Insight, live at noon with a rebroadcast at 7 p.m. Sacramento business and elected leaders made an economic pilgrimage to Washington, D.C., with the hopes of returning with new investments and development here at home. Ahead on Insight, we'll break down the annual cap-to-cap trip. Also, Tuolumne County is home to some of California's most precious natural resources. But this gateway to Yosemite also faces a web of challenges, from devastating wildfires to a lack of affordable housing. We'll learn how this rural community is adapting its approach to recovery and resiliency. Finally, a new career event for hundreds of local high school students is coming to Cosumnes River College this Friday. We'll learn about the first annual Sacramento Regional Youth Career Fest. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. That's all coming up today on Insight. First, here's the news. From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. If you've lived in Sacramento long enough, you know how far it's come in the past 20 years. Natomas was once nothing but open fields. Downtown was pretty quiet, especially at night. Our food and restaurant scene was a skeleton of what it is today. Roseville, a sleepy suburb in West Sacramento, was a small neighbor across the river. But look how things have changed. From revitalized waterfronts to a state-of-the-art arena, Michelin nods in the culinary world, Roseville becoming among one of the fastest growing cities in the state, and West Sac landing the Oakland A's. This and more was possible because of the people and the businesses willing to take a chance and invest in our region. A few days ago, the largest delegation of business leaders and elected officials returned from Washington, D.C. for the annual cap-to-cap trip. Robert Height is the president and CEO of the Sacramento Metro Chamber and joins us with what they hope to accomplish. Good afternoon, Robert.
Hi, good afternoon, Vicki.
So this was the 52nd trip to Washington by Sacramento leaders. Tell us about how the capital-to-capital or cap-to-cap, how it all got started.
So this program actually started way back when there were some conversations about base closures, and a small group got together to talk about how to protect our area and our region. And from there, the contingent grew to what it is today, and the Sacramento Metro Chamber was proud to once again produce the 52nd annual cap-to-cap trip.
Okay, so some 50 years later, what goes on this trip today in 2024? What's the goal?
So really, this program and production that we work is bringing together a regional voice. As you mentioned, this was our largest trip to date. So we had well over 425 elected officials, business leaders, community partners, and really the change makers for our region travel back to DC with us to unite around the issues that matter most to hopefully impact the quality of life and bring federal dollars back to the Sacramento region.
Looking back at prior cap-to-cap trips, can people who live in Sacramento and the surrounding counties look around and see examples of success stories from this trip?
So while I've recently taken the helm of the chamber in January as their new CEO, I would say that as a direct result of the chamber's impact, collectively working with the business community, what you see today and what you will see in the future is a result of the advocacy efforts. You described, as you kind of did the intro, of what the area looked like and the region looked like 10, 15, 20 years ago to where we are today. If we look out over the next 10, 15, 20 years, I think we're going to continue to see a increase in growth, vitality, and overall production of life, business, and what we hope to come to expect in a new economy.
When you're in DC, who are you talking to? Is it mostly lawmakers?
So the nice thing about it is the makeup of that trip, about 425 people, we had about 100 and freshmen, which are first time attendees. So that's really exciting to have 100 people from our region, first time going back to DC with us. We had about 100 elected officials, and the rest was made up of folks that we call the veterans who have traveled year over year with us. One gentleman, 38 years with us continuously. So that's our longest record. They've not missed 38 years in a row. That'd be Mr. Roy Brewer. But in any event, those meetings that we convened back there was more than 170 gatherings, whether it was a smaller group or a larger delegation through our entirety. And it would be with elected officials, federal agencies, all the different organizations and people who help us to shape our region. We divide up into 13 different teams focused on different areas, whether it's agriculture, food and ag, economic development, transportation, public safety. Our newest was flood protection and wildfires. So again, we divide up into different industry segments that we know are focal points for our community and the region that we serve. As a Metro Chamber, we have 6 counties and 22 cities, so a pretty big area. And the goal is to unite on those things that matter the most around strategic investments for our infrastructure, enhancing our regional resiliency and sustainability, which is vital, and then also fostering an innovative economic environment.
When it comes to lawmakers and even some of these agencies as well, they have districts here and are located here. I know that as a chamber, this isn't the only conversation you have with them in a year. What does actually traveling to DC and having that face-to-face contact at our nation's capital, what does that add?
So what it does is, you know, some of the folks, which was kind of surprising to me, we're in a metro area, but some of the folks do not see each other that travel back with us as frequently as we might think that they do. But I think the biggest impact is our federal officials can do a phenomenal job back in DC, working with all the agencies that kind of have an impact in the different key areas that we focus on. But when we travel back, and this is the largest delegation for a Chamber of Commerce in the entire nation. So this is something for the Sacramento region to be proud of, that of all the chambers in the land, we bring back the best and largest contingency to DC to advocate. And so when we can work hand in hand with our federal officials and going to the different agencies to talk about the challenges, the opportunities, the things that can make our region better and stronger, it gives them the ammunition as they continue to advocate. Again, the federal dollars, there's only so many to go around. And so we need to help complement their efforts and their work so that we're top of mind when discussions are happening.
What were some of the biggest priorities that rose up to the top on this trip?
So I think it's around those kind of 3 things that I mentioned, which are the strategic investments in infrastructure. And infrastructure is vital to our area, whether it's transportation, the development and increase in terms of housing and housing affordability, opportunity. There are so many different key areas. One doesn't highlight one over the other because it's an ecosystem. And so it's really important that each of those 13 teams that divided up with us and those hundreds of volunteers, they're very, very passionate. They are experts in their field. And so each one is vital to the overall economic success of the region.
Any big breakthroughs you want to announce here on Insight? I know you've only been back in Sacramento for a few days.
So I know there's a couple wins we have yet to, we won't necessarily announce them here. I'd love to tell you, I could give you one of those, but I'll give you one example. So I was sitting in a meeting, it was a lunch meeting that was hosted, and it had to do with our community colleges, healthcare, and it had to do with workforce. As the partners came together for the meeting, I don't know that everyone had the kind of mindset of what was going to come out of that, but a very big win and success story on how we're going to partner together with healthcare and community colleges. And it'll address some of the workforce issues. And so they'll be coming out with that announcement very soon. But that's just one example of how collaboration really comes together. And the reality is, you've got a lot of folks who might be perceived as competitors. And while that may be necessarily true in a way, the reality is they're not really competitors. We're collaborators. When we can work together across all industry segments to strengthen this region with a voice and a unified voice on some key message points and issues, that makes us better. And that's something that I would say of all my years of leading chambers makes this region and the communities we serve very special, because I've never seen that type of collaboration in any of the other communities I've served.
When you're actually out there and you're pitching Sacramento and the 6 counties that you represent to others, overall, what is the feedback that you get about our area?
So, you know, it's interesting because now that I'm here, boots on the ground, and it's my home, it's my community, I'm even more proud, right? So Sacramento is one of those, I think, hidden gems throughout our state and throughout the country, because we're strategically located. There's a lot of things within kind of a short drive from us. And really the goal is to make sure that collectively myself and all of the other community champions that are out there are working in collaboration to continue to put Sacramento on the map so that people see us and know us as a destination, a great place to live, work, and play, raise your family. Innovation is key. So, you know, I think it's all of our jobs to keep basically pounding that drum about what makes our communities and our region so great.
How do you handle and respond to the more critical narratives that California can be an expensive place to do business? We also have a homelessness crisis, and there's a national narrative that California metro areas have a crime problem. How do you respond and navigate those questions when it gets brought up?
You know, that's an amazing question. My first meeting of the day was in a retail crime meeting. And so, you know, we always have to address the realities, whether we like them or not. I think we have to be honest and upfront with where we are. Listen, Sacramento is number 7 in the nation for retail crime. Ahead of us are 2 other cities in our community, San Francisco and LA. I think number 1 in the nation is New York. So look, on things like that, that's where we need to work together with our partners, speaking on retail crime, with our DAs, our law enforcement partners, work with the legislature to put fixes in motion that are going to address that and strengthen the punitive side of what goes on to give law enforcement a little bit more bite and teeth. Homelessness, that's an issue that we face across the country. It's also dissecting the type of homeless.
California does have half of the unsheltered population in the country, though, and Sacramento has a large unhoused population.
You're right. And it's getting better. And while it's not necessarily where we'd like it to be, what I can tell you is that as I'm talking with the businesses, their heart understands. And, you know, the impact that they had, and COVID certainly exacerbated that for us greatly, because as downtown kind of got vacated with a lot of the government workers and folks who were put to home work and versus in office, that allowed that migration to kind of come in and take over and set up their encampments and things like that. But the organizations and the departments throughout the city and the county are really working diligently to address the issue. It's not something that they take lightly. We didn't get into this situation overnight, and we won't get out of it overnight, but we have to continue to be persistent and focus on identifying the path forward for the type of homelessness and unhoused. And there's different paths if it's someone who is having a mental health crisis and breakdown, as opposed to maybe drug use, or maybe a family who's fallen on hard times, couldn't make rent, and then ended up in their car. And so that's a different type of unhoused or homelessness. So when we talk about that, we have to do it with heart and humility, but then understand the impacts that has about creating a safe and viable community to downtown and balance that out.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Robert Height with the Sacramento Metro Chamber about the recent CAP to CAP trip to D.C. to secure funding and projects for our area. As you mentioned, Robert, you are a new Sacramento transplant. This is the first time you've been on Insight since you've been the president and CEO of the Sac Metro Chamber almost 4 months ago at the start of the new year. You come to us from Glendale, Arizona. What are some of the similarities between Glendale, Arizona and Sacramento?
So Glendale is a growing community where I came from and had a lot of opportunity for continued growth. They faced some of the same challenges when it came to housing, some of the homelessness, that sort of thing. So there are some parallels to that. But I think what really resonates the most for me on my new home here in Sacramento is the people. This community is made up of some really remarkable people who have been very warm and welcoming to me. But what I watch is the collaboration and how they want to come together and work on those things that will transform us to becoming the best we can be. And so that's probably the most unique thing that stands out is the way the people are connected to this community, unlike any I've ever seen. Mm.
Being a newcomer, though, also comes with a valuable perspective. What would you say are some of Sacramento's and the 6 counties you represent, some of the biggest challenges?
So what it does is it allows me as an organization, a leader, to come in with no preconceived notions, you know, kind of a clean slate. You know, the challenges that we will always face as a region that is on the rise and that is growing is that transformation and the growing pains of how do we make sure our hub, which is downtown Sacramento, is vibrant, has vitality, and then the ecosystem of what our surrounding communities bring to a region. And so it's to balance that out with kind of that regional perspective. So we will face those challenges around how we grow responsibly. How do we address those issues that you mentioned earlier around retail crime or housing and things like that? So, you know, there's a lot of things we need to work on. But there's also a lot of things that we can celebrate in terms of what our community has to offer.
How is the Metro Chamber funded?
So the Sacramento Metro Chamber is a member-based organization. We are a not-for-profit organization, and our funding comes through the business community. Those businesses belong to the chamber, invest yearly through their membership, and also through their sponsorships and or advertising of the Metro Chamber.
What is the benefit if you're a member to being part of a chamber?
So one is you have a connectivity to an organization that every day is going to champion business, quality of life, and people. And so we know the biggest investment any company makes is in the human capital, which is their workforce. And so we take our job very, very seriously in being a partner to business. Their success is our success. And so being aligned to the chamber, this is the one organization, the regional metro chamber, that is going to work every day on behalf of business advocacy, business connection, business relation, and everything that we can do to help a business succeed.
Robert, thanks for joining us. It was your first time on Insight. Look forward to more.
Thank you very much.
Robert Height is the president and CEO of the Sacramento Metro Chamber, discussing the recent cap-to-cap trip to Washington, D.C. to secure funding and projects for our area. Up next, we'll head to Tuolumne County. It is home to some of California's most precious natural resources. But this gateway to Yosemite also faces a web of challenges, from wildfires to a lack of affordable housing. We'll learn how this rural community is adapting its approach to recovery and resiliency. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. Tuolumne County is among the smaller counties in California, but a population of 55,000 residents is just one piece of its value. The county is home to some of the most precious natural resources in the state. But this gateway to Yosemite is faced with a debilitating reality plaguing California foothill and gold rush communities: the hazardous and costly consequences of devastating wildfires, from forest health to the unforgiving fire insurance landscape, as well as hurdles in affordable housing. It's a web of challenges that are all interconnected. In recent years, the county has been approaching recovery and resiliency by adapting to the needs of today, guided by the belief that a healthy landscape and ecosystem will make living in Tuolumne County safer from wildfires, as well as more affordable, too. Joining us with more is Jaron Brandon, the Tuolumne County District 5 Supervisor, which includes the areas of Columbia and Jamestown. And Caitlin Henry is the Administrative Analyst of the county's Master Stewardship Agreement, which focuses heavily on forest health and fuel treatments. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Vicki, thank you so much.
All right, Supervisor Brandon, I want to start with you. If you can introduce us a little bit, how long have you been in Tuolumne County?
Well, so I'm born and raised from Tuolumne County. I'm one of our younger county elected representatives within the state. I've been in office serving my community in this area for about 3.5 years, and I'm actually going to be doing a second term up here, too. So in it for the long haul. And it's a beautiful, beautiful area full of saloons and wildlife and some of the most beautiful places across the state. I told you I got to sneak that one in there, right? Come up for a visit.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I've been there many times. For those who haven't, often when people think of Tuolumne County, I mean, a first thought I would imagine would be Yosemite, but Tuolumne mm-hmm. County is so much more than that. Mm-hmm. What would you like people to know?
Well, I'd like people to know just how interconnected. As you mentioned, we're a smaller population county within the state. And sometimes people say, well, land doesn't vote, right? We got about 1.3 million acres here, but the land does kind of speak. It is something that is very integral into, I think, a lot of California's plans and our needs. So as an example, to any listeners out there in the Bay Area, a huge percentage of the water drank there comes from Hetch Hetchy. That's within our watershed. What the valley is using for agriculture comes off of our mountains. Many of the wood products that you may use or soil amendments, things you're building your house, doing a little deck, that may be produced right here in Tuolumne County. And of course, the beautiful recreation, a lot of the urban areas were the number one traveled corridor to Yosemite, but we also have these great gold rush towns. We've got the Railtown Museum for steam engine history. We got a lot of really cool places too. But we're not just an inland island. We are deeply integrated with the rest of the state. And I think this topic kind of touches on just how connected that is.
Yeah, well, let's get to wildfires, because within the past decade or so, they have devastated communities, disfigured landscapes, with years-long recoveries, if not longer, mm-hmm. for many of these communities. But each community is unique. What are the main messages that you and your fellow supervisors get from the 55,000 residents who call Tuolumne County home?
Yeah, I think it's a shared collective subconscious up here, right? Everybody from this area, I think, somewhat understands the forestry challenges, and you laid it out so well. It's very interconnected between forestry and the fire risk, what we're providing in terms of county services, critical services for people, the federal land sharing, all the way to home insurance. You know, fundamentally, can you afford a roof over your head? And I kind of like to lay out the story like this. We were traditionally one of the oldest areas of the state. We were way back when a part of Mexico for a very long time. And some of the initial communities that founded over here, of course, besides our indigenous communities and partners. After mining had left, we saw a large change to a lot of ranching, but then forestry. And we had mills open up all across our county. It was a huge place. In fact, my own district, Columbia, not only the birthplace of our upcoming Cinco de Mayo celebration, but was actually considered to be the second spot considered for the state capital at the time. So it was a prominent place. Now, we had a huge rise, I think, in the 60s and 70s and 80s. A lot of regulatory movements that ended up creating a huge decline in locally produced timber and a lot of the natural resource industries. This hit mountain communities immensely. And we have for 100 years been actually very good at getting rid of fire. So good that we built up the fuel that now we're dealing with these catastrophic megafires. And I think that really became a point in 2013 with the Rim Fire. That was the changing. I mean, that, you can think of this as the beginning of the modern megafire season, that maybe all of us have a little fatigue hearing every year, here's another 100,000, 200,000, 500,000, million acres. Rim Fire was the second largest fire in California's recorded history at the time. This is only about 12 years ago, right? 11 years. It's now the 11th. It's not even the top 10. It burned 257,000 acres. It nearly overtook one of our towns up here, and it took 9 weeks to be able to put that out. So we got a very early start on saying, wow, we have to get people to the table. We got to get folks working together. We need to work on our resiliency, our preparation. And I'm happy to kind of share a little bit. And luckily, I surround myself with people smarter than me. So I brought Caitlin here to talk about some of the great work that we've been doing. I think trying to hear and pick up that call.
Yeah. We're going to get into those solutions in just a moment. I just want to touch upon one important thing you said, and it really underscores that landscape is a crucial piece in this. You know, wildfires don't know jurisdictional boundaries. You know, communities can butt up to a national forest or public land. What does that look like in Tuolumne County? If you can kind of help us visualize what the landscape looks like.
Absolutely. So you imagine you're leaving, let's say, Merced, and you're going up along the 108 corridor, and you're taking it from the valley up to kind of the rolling hills, and suddenly you start seeing more oaks, and you see these little cute communities off to the side. Most of them started as mining towns that burnt and rebuilt over time, and eventually established themselves again, maybe hundreds or a couple hundred years old in some of the cases. And as you would continue up 108 or 120, you end up into the mountains all the way up to, say, the Sonora Pass, up to Yosemite and Hetch Hetchy, up at, you know, 9, 10,000 feet, and the snow line into a completely alpine area. So our communities, we're within a county that is a federal lands county. The West Coast has a huge amount of federally owned and operated kind of managed lands. Sometimes not always managed as much as we like, but a little bit. So 76% of our county is encompassed with Yosemite and then the Stanislaus National Forest. A lot of the rest is actually private timber and ag. So we have these small towns in different areas about 15 to 30 minutes away of anywhere from about 2,000 to 5,000 people, beautiful little main streets around the periphery of these federal lands. And as you kind of hinted, we have a term we use, people and listeners have probably heard, called the WUI, the Wildland Urban Interface. To us, this is just where we live and where our communities have lived and where they found their, I think, livelihoods out of. That's more of a modern term now, like applied in retrospect. But we do live within that area that fire was a part of that ecosystem for a very long time, for thousands of years with human intervention, and probably for hundreds of thousands or millions with at least natural fire. So where that was removed with, I think, the good intent of protecting communities, and where tribal fire was ended, and where the timber mill decline ended up with a loss of kind of human managed lands there, we ended up with this massive overgrowth. So if you were to come to our area and drive through, you'd look around and say, boy, that's pretty. It's beautiful. But I can't see 20 feet off the road in some places because the pines and the trees, they're just so thick. And as you mentioned, the fire doesn't follow the jurisdictional boundaries, but you can really see the difference between some of the private properties, which we maintain to keep safe, to be able to, if a fire came through, keep low, keep hot, burn fast, as it's supposed to, versus some of the areas that we haven't gotten to that are densely overgrown. The fire gets into the canopy. You can end up with what's called type shift, which means that it kills all of the trees, all of the bushes. The forest, it functionally doesn't exist anymore. And then some of the work that we've been doing in other areas where you look at it and say, wow, this is open. It's good for kind of animals. You're seeing, especially maybe a couple years later, bushes and flowers coming back. And it looks like an area that is safe. Mm-hmm. So that's a little take on what it might look like driving up the county. And you kind of see what we've done, what we haven't done, and where the burns are, too.
All right, Caitlin, I want to get to you because you're part of these solutions. You work with the county's master stewardship agreement. You focus on forest health. What does your work look like?
So we're very busy all year round, because if we're not doing actual on the ground implementation, there's a lot of stuff that goes in participation before that can even happen. So a lot of surveys. But so we're very lucky to be able to make the progress that we have because of the collaborative we're based off of, which is Yosemite Stanislaus Solutions, or another one otherwise known as YSS, which is a collaborative group that is a highly diverse of people that have interest with the common goal of restoring and maintaining the healthy forest. So we work with that collaborative and all the stakeholders, and we really try to take science-based information and drive consensus based decisions and try not to focus on the areas that we don't have consensus on, so we can keep progress moving towards, you know, environmental alignment and those common interests, and just, you know, coming together with the fact that if stuff burns, you know what I mean, it's not going to support anybody. So we have are wrapping up our first large scale project in the state that is treating an unburned area. So that's called SERL, which stands for the Social, Ecological, and Resilience Across the Landscape Project, which was 118,000 acres.
And where is this located in the county so people can visualize where it's at?
Yeah, so it kind of sits from 108 and goes northwest over to the Mokelumne River, over to Calaveras side, and then extends over to all the way down to 108 from the Clavey. And then from there, we're actually in development of our EIS for SERL 2.0, which flips on the other side of 108. So a lot of people that go up to Pinecrest, or, you know, a lot of the recreation areas in like Long Barn or Strawberry, you'll see a lot of those heel breaks that we just wrapped up this last summer. And then now we're getting ready to develop the next SERL 2.0, which is 162,000 acres. So it's large scale, like I said, pre-fire project compared to, you know, our rim fire area projects that we do our, you know, post recovery from that fire and doing more restoration and more reforestation efforts.
Yeah. There's a lot of forest management and really relooking and reevaluating what forest health looks like across the state from one community to the next. Supervisor Brandon, what's unique about this CERL program when compared to other work that's being done in California?
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, it's hard to put into terms. I thought, well, everybody thinks in football fields, right? So let's look at 257,000 acres of variety of fuel treatments, everything from fire lines to fuel reduction to patch cuts, things that are really carefully negotiated. And I think a lot of people in the state would remember the spotted owl wars, right, where you really saw the environmental lobby and the timber industry sparring and kind of to a stalemate that was not good for either. And then seeing the federal and local jurisdictions not able to work very well together. And so what the stewardship agreement and what Caitlin does with YSS creates a forum that they've been able to get this accomplished and bring in tens of millions of dollars. So 257,000 acres in football fields is 194,000, which is not very helpful. But I looked at it, it's about 9 times the size of the entire San Francisco city and county. It's about a third the size of Rhode Island. It's 401 square miles. So this is an incredibly ambitious project that we've been able to implement based on these really strong partnerships, these multi-benefit projects. And one of the kind of big things driving it, there was a great 2020 study that came out of the University of Chicago. Speaking of that interconnectedness, it analyzed the 2020 fire season, and it showed that the state's greenhouse gas inventory increased 30% that year. It effectively mitigated or cut what was the last 16 years of sequestered carbon from other measures in 1 year of the fire season. This is currently not really accounted for in that inventory. And so this stuff, by allowing fires to burn cleaner, allowing trees to, you know, basically reforest the area and be carbon sinks there, it has a massive impact on the entire state. And we hope eventually within the kind of home insurance area. So with that, we've been also trying to figure out, when you take down trees, some of it we turn to lumber. We're able to sell that to be able to cover the cost of the project. Great partnerships with Sierra Pacific. But what do you do with the non-saleable timber? So we've been looking a lot with the state at what economic opportunities there are for restoration efforts, triple bottom line things, we throw these terms around, but good for the community, good for the environment, and good for the economy. So that can be anything from stump the pump, green hydrogen. We have a plant coming up to help run our buses, hopefully. We're looking at pellet exports. We're looking even at value added wood products, these advanced wood materials that may be able to turn what are carbon emitters in construction actually into carbon sinks. So it's some really exciting stuff right on the cutting edge of forestry in California.
So Tuolumne County, so we heard from timber, like industries that include timber, but in Tuolumne County, you also have Native and Indigenous communities. You have two tribes in the county. You also have environmental groups, I would imagine. What role are they playing in this collaborative?
I think we pride ourselves on being, I mean, it's a collaborative. If you look at the partnership list on YSS, it fills your screen and you got to scroll a little bit. We always want to have, I think our colleagues in federal governments, we want to have Indigenous people there. We make sure to have a broad net with all of the different interests, and say environmental, you know, their community interests. At the end of the day, everybody at that table is community minded. And so we try to cast a wide net. That includes also not just like county, city, and federal partners, but resource conservation districts that accounts for land trusts. So it's bringing everybody there. And I think Caitlin said it really well. It's focusing on what we agree on. Because if you have where we go back to, I think, and I was born in 92, Vicky. So yeah, I speak about the 70s like I lived it. I did not. But you go back there to this stalemate in the courts over new legislation and say, well, we want to protect the environment, but we also want to be able to do so in a way that's good for these communities, that creates the resources we need, and balancing that. It's no good to anybody to have that tied up in courts where not only the timber industry can't be able to operate, we can't see grazing, but on the other side, without any management of the forest, we're seeing these fires not, you know, impact our greenhouse gas emission inventory, but also destroy habitat on an unprecedented scale. I think a lot of people say, well, this is a, you know, it's a result of climate change immediately. That's the thing. I think that is something that's exacerbated existing issues within it. But kind of going back, we removed fire from that ecosystem and we're in the process of restoring it. I think indigenous folks, that's an incredible, important partnership to have there, because they managed to manage these lands through their tribal ecological knowledge for thousands of years. And within about 100, we've kind of messed it up, and we're putting a lot of effort in trying to be able to fix that. So it's a wide net.
So in the last few minutes that we have, if you're a resident in Tuolumne County, you're listening to this, all the work that's going on for wildfire prevention, as well as resiliency, forest health, how does mm-hmm. this work ultimately benefit them and housing and businesses? Because you did touch upon fire insurance, and that has just been egregiously challenging for so many mm-hmm. communities and WUI zones. How does this help them?
Well, that one strikes home, Vicky. I just had my Fair Plan homeowners insurance canceled. A lot of people might have heard the Fair Plan through news articles, but this is that catastrophic risk pool of high risk areas where you can't get insurance. And when these companies leave the state, you got a mortgage up here. I mean, what do you do? And how are they calculating these things? And there's a ton of questions about it. So if you get canceled off the Fair Plan, and we've been number one per capita in having those policies in our county, about 40%, I think, that's saying something that's pretty negative. I think what it gets to is a few different things we're preparing for. On the one side, we want to have a resilient and productive landscape. And I think we are very much achieving that right now. In fact, what we're doing and what Caitlin's doing, this has been projects handed down, Republican, Democrat, Independent, multiple generations of staff, and generation of people. This is something that's been built on for well over a decade, and now it's working. So we're providing jobs, career pathways, we're providing forest work, we're creating more timber, we're retooling some of the plants. That's been really great. The next is, I think, trying to mitigate fire risk. And it's not removing fire, it's actually the opposite. We're trying to reintroduce fire. We want to get to a point that we could have a fire happen and it goes back to where it was before, as it takes out some of the undergrowth and the brushes, but the bark protects the old growth in the trees and the forest survives even stronger the next year. We are in the process of that, but there is so much more work to do, where even just our county has 1 million acres of federal land to deal with. When it comes into how is this actually going to protect, I think, the community right here, we hope that lowered risk of fire, that is making tangible changes here. I know it is. We can prove the flame lengths are small, the fire incidence is less frequent. We do a lot of that research. Unfortunately, when it applies to things that are predictive modeling, like the CAL FIRE high fire severity risk zones. We talk about Board of Forestry changes on evacuation routes and road standards. And then we talk about homeowners insurance, which is crippling our area. We're paying more in that than property taxes in most places in this fairly disinvested community. What it's gonna take is partnership. So hopefully, again, we are not a big county. We really need folks in more urbanized and suburbanized areas to hear that we are connected to you in a big way. The number one reason schools were closed down in 2020 was wildfire smoke from our communities burning up in the mountains. We have impacts across the board, positive and negative. We need their support to be able to demand a solution for this and not to ignore this issue that we're being priced out. Need to continue pushing that we get the resources to keep doing these forest project maps and get informed on it. And we have a fantastic GIS map, just a fancy interactive map. It will go through every detail of our projects. If you're kind of a wonk and you like to go, you know, figure out what does that actually look like, we will show you every single acre of what we are doing, who's doing it, how it's being done, how it was negotiated. And it's a wonderful storyboard that was put together by our staff that I think is the first of its kind in the state, maybe within the country too.
It is a very interactive and visual map. I enjoyed going through it, and it's very digestible as well. Caitlin, I want to leave the last words with you. What excites you about the work that you're doing, and what do you hope listeners take away from this conversation?
What really excites me about it is just, you know, the collaboration and trust. Most of it was built before I was here, but to see that product of what has came, it's just incredible. It's really cool because, like Supervisor Brandon, I also grew up here in the county, you know, born and raised. And it's just really amazing to see that camaraderie, collaboration, and then also just the improvements that we're doing. Because seeing the landscape change from the Rim Fire, I grew up in Sugar Pine, and then now I'm on the other side in Groveland. And what happened in Groveland, it's just sad. And so to do that prevention now on the other side where I was, you know, born and raised, it's just really exciting to me to make that difference. And, you know, it's the forest resiliency, it's no small task. And I'm just excited to do it with our local community together. And it's just cool to see everybody's excitement and, like, you know, want and need to do this. And it's just, you know, we brought in over, at this point, it was $62 million, but we've gotten another allocation of $26 million and another $7 million also as well from CAL FIRE. I just can't thank, you know, the Forest Service, YSS, all of our, you know, grantors, the WCB, Wildlife Conservation Board, Tuolumne River Trust, Sierra Nevada Conservancy, you know, all of these partners. We couldn't have done it without any of them, our local tribes. And it's just all of that money, it's a large amount, and it's still not enough because the work is expensive. And to get where we need to be, it's just, you know, it's really exciting to do it together. And just there's just a need to just keep going.
Caitlin and Supervisor Brandon, thank you so much. This was just the tip of the iceberg of the conversation. Both of you will have to come back.
Awesome. Thank you, Vicky.
Jaron Brandon is the Tuolumne County District 5 Supervisor, which includes the areas of Columbia and Jamestown. Caitlin Henry is the Administrative Analyst of the county's Master Stewardship Agreement, which focuses heavily on forest health and fuel treatments. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. High school is a time when students might be thinking about their future careers, and there are a lot of opportunities out there in a variety of industries. But for a lot of reasons, many students face barriers to exploring those job opportunities or just getting their foot in the door. However, a new event in Sacramento is seeking to change that for hundreds of local students. The inaugural Sacramento Regional Youth Career Fest will take place this Friday at Cosumnes River College. Joining us now is Mitchell Leach II. He is the event's organizer, as well as the president and founder of Interns to Pros. Good afternoon.
Hello. I'm so excited.
We are so excited to have you. I love all that you're doing here in Sacramento. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get so interested and passionate in student career development?
Oh, my goodness. Let me tell you, Vicky. So, I grew up, I'm originally from Chicago, south side of the city, grew up in the hood, as they say. Wanted to be like Michael Jordan. I got Jordans on my feet right now. But as you see me in the studio here, your boy is only 5'6". I want to go make it. So I said, listen, let me be a person who can cover sports. And so at 14, this changed my life. I literally said, you know what? I want a job shot on my favorite local sportscaster. So I bust out the Yellow Pages. I know Gen Zers don't know what that is, but the Yellow Pages, looked up CBS2 Chicago. Left him a message, and he called me back in 30 minutes. And so he invited me down the next week. It was amazing. He told me the art of journalism. I need to learn how to write. I need to know how to do an internship. And didn't know what an internship was at 14. And so that meeting, that one day at 14, he ended up inviting me down each and every month to do an unofficial internship. And so fast forward, get all that experience with the college, did the internships. and ended up landing my dream job straight out of school, ended up being ESPN in sports media. And so that was where I got really passionate about really helping out the next generation of students.
Thank goodness for Yellow Pages.
Let me tell you.
That phone call was pivotal in your life.
Yes.
You're also the founder of Interns to Pros. Tell us about your organization.
Yeah. So Interns to Pros, we launched in 2018, where we connect, inspire, and equip students for their careers through events, resources. We have a lot of workshops. We just really, really want to see students get connected to a vast array of careers. And so the goal is to, and this is why this event that we got going on this Friday is so important, show them what's possible. Because the heart of the event and the heart of my organization, we're partnering with Many of Mothers, another organization who does amazing work. There's four gaps that I'm passionate about, Vicky. It is, there's a career awareness gap. There's a career access gap. There's a career employability gap. And there's also, and don't judge me, I made up a word, flourishability. And that's how to not, you know, how to work hard, but do it in a healthy way. And so we want every student, regardless of background, whatever, we want them to flourish at every touch point of their career.
I love the name of your organization, Intern to Pros, because if you've had an internship, you know that it's professional development. It also is your foot in the door if you like that job. It's also a great opportunity to know that, hey, I thought I might have liked this. It's not really for me. So, you know, I'm going to do a hard left and do something else. But for myself, I didn't really know that internships existed, you know, and you touched upon, I mean, you were just 14 years old, but I think there's a lot of high school students, even college students, that don't see the value or have that awareness about internships and the door that it could open.
It's massive. It's massive. Like you just said, 14, I didn't know what an internship was, had never heard the word, and I did a ton of them in college. And like you just said, you learn what you're good at, you learn what you want to do, and with the best part, what you don't want to do. You know what I'm saying? And so the goal is, if the earlier we can expose everybody, but especially those high schoolers before they go to college and spend a lot of money, you might at least know what I explain it like this. You don't have to know exactly what you want to do, but at least know the arena. And then just like Golden One, you don't have to be a basketball player to be in Golden One. You could be in sales, you could be in marketing, you could be whatever. Just now your job is, as long as you know the arena, now you can start exploring the different roles. And that's what the Sacramento Regional Youth Career Fest is all about.
And your nonprofit has been around for about 6 years.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, this Career Fest is the first year. What gap do you hope the Regional Youth Career Fest, what do you think it will fill in Sacramento come Friday?
Yeah, we want this event to be the ultimate career exploration and cultivation event. And so we're going to have students from all over the region. And thank you so much, Sac City Unified and Elk Grove Unified. We're going to be sending out a lot of students. We have several other schools are sending students as a field trip. And the goal is to expose them as possible. So gap number one, that a career awareness gap, but then also that career access gap. So they're going to be hearing from a lot of big companies, small companies, local businesses, all different sectors. We got the federal government coming out, U.S. Department of Labor, a lot of great partners and sponsors who are going to just be here to showcase not only their organizations, but their industries. And so we want students, I didn't even know that was an industry. I didn't know that was possible, because the power of me, back to my story, I got so much. I was so blessed to see what was possible. So the goal is see what's possible, see how it's possible, and then we help make it possible. That's what my organization, Many of the Mothers, this whole event, which we, this is the first one, we want this to grow into something that will be, play a vital part in every student's lives in our great region.
It goes from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Yeah.
I imagine there's going to be a lot of different businesses and groups that are there, you know, introducing themselves to students.
Yeah, yeah. And so the cool thing is, I'm on a lot of different boards. I'm engaged in a lot of different industries. But there's a common thread. They all want to know how to engage the next generation, Generation Z. We got Generation Alpha after that. We want to expose them to what's possible, equip them, because I can give them a job. I'm blessed. We have over 5,000 corporate recruiters in our network across the country, from Google to Netflix to ESPN to, you know, medium-sized companies. I could give them a job, but are they ready to flourish? Will they be equipped? So that's why we connect, inspire, and equip. And that, and what this event is about is exposing them. So, okay, you just met with SMUD. All right. You know, they have a high school internship. You know, they have a college internship. They know this in high school, so they can get beat. We want them to be really proactive, because that's the key. If everybody can be proactive from the student's perspective, also from the companies, Come on now, there are very few companies who are out here being proactive about engaging with the youth. So we're encouraging these companies to say, hey, listen, showcase your industry, showcase your organization, because you want to plant a seed that you'll water. So when they get to college, mm-hmm. they'll know, oh, I already know I want to do an internship at Kaiser. And this is what I'm going to do. Oh, I met that recruiter at the Sacramento Regional Youth Career Fest. I have his email. I have hundreds of stories like that. Just from a Zoom call, just from an event like this. We are the bridge between the students, the educators, and the companies.
So if you're a high school student, you're going to be going on Friday from 9 to 1 p.m. It seems like a lot's going to be happening. Yes. How do you want them to navigate that day?
Yeah, we want them to have... I'm a fun guy. I like that. I like to have fun.
Really? I couldn't tell.
Yes, yes, yes. I love to have a good time. So we want them to have a good time. It's a field trip on a Friday. Are you not in class? Come on now. So we want them to get off the bus and really engage. We're going to have, like I said, I think we're over like 45 different companies. We'll have free LinkedIn headshots, professional headshots, expose them to that. We'll have the mayor of Sacramento is coming. It's Mr. Steinberg. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Dr. Bush, president of the Sumner River College, will be speaking. I'll be running around hyping people up and telling them where to go. We have giveaways. Thank you to the Sacramento Kings. We got a lot of surprises. I can't even tell you. We got some really, really cool things going on. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So students, be prepared. Be proactive. Don't be scared. This is going to be a lot of fun. And think about the benefit of seeing what's possible early.
Yeah. Mitchell, it's great meeting you, and I can tell Friday's going to be a lot of fun.
That's right. That's
you
right.
You are the right energy for that event, for a job you. There for high school students.
That's
Mitchell,
right.
Mitchell Leach II is the president and founder of Interns to Pros, and we've been talking about the first annual Sacramento Regional Youth Career Fest. It is taking place at Cosumnes River College this Friday, April 26th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests and events at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. And if you want to join the conversation, you can email us at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producer Sarit Lashinsky and managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer is Chris Feltz and our audio engineer is Steven Starbuck. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones and our original show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.